Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first division, first wave, Samanya Bhakti. We've been discussing the six characteristics of bhakti. So we discussed Kleshagni, how bhakti removes all miseries and difficulties by purifying the heart of all sins, all stages of sin, from aparabdha to kutam to bijam to parabdha. And the ultimate cause of all suffering is ignorance or avidya, so bhakti removes that by attaining transcendental knowledge and the direct intervention of the Lord. The Lord himself enters the heart of the devotee. Of course, he's already there. But he manifests his presence there and cleanses the heart. Srinivatam Swagata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. Just by hearing and chanting Krishna, the purification is going on automatically without any separate endeavor other than bhakti. So bhakti is so powerful. And then the second characteristic of bhakti is Radhi. Second characteristic of bhakti is Shubhada. Shubhada means that bhakti gives all auspiciousness. So Rupa Goswami, someone may ask the question, what is this auspiciousness? And then Rupa Goswami explains it comes in fourfold way. One is that a devotee becomes pleasing. He pleases everyone by being a devotee. Because whatever he does, it's auspicious. A devotee is, bhakti brings auspiciousness to the devotee. And bhakti transforms the devotee into being an agent of auspiciousness himself. Because wherever he goes, he becomes pleasing to everyone because he actually distributes auspiciousness. Because whenever someone sees a devotee or speaks about him or remembers him, then they get connected with Krishna, with God. And that brings auspiciousness to their life, any contact with God. So they see a devotee walking in the street, oh, there's a Hare Krishna. So in that way they're pleasing to everyone. And then they're also, what is it? They say they have all good qualities, that bhakti brings all good qualities. Simply by serving Krishna, all the good qualities of the demigods manifest in one. And what there was fourth one was that he benefits everyone, which I mentioned. And he attracts everyone, produces good qualities, and bestows the supreme happiness. So we discussed that yesterday, about the happiness that bhakti brings. Because the happiness of bhakti is eternal, because it's not dependent on the modes of nature, yoga or karma or gyan. One will move around in the modes of nature by various physical or mental processes and give some state of peace or happiness, but it won't last forever. Because when the modes change or when the situation changes, then they'll find themselves overcome by ignorance or again take another birth or succumb to the impulse of passion and fall down, and then again start. So that happiness is temporary. But the happiness that bhakti gives, which is a symptom of the auspicious nature of bhakti, shubhada, happiness is from the based on the soul. The devotee, he enters into the spiritual plane through bhakti, and he experiences the happiness of the soul. Because even while he's living, he becomes liberated. The soul actually realizes his eternal identity, jivan mukta suchate. Then he experiences spiritual happiness, because moment to moment he's connected with Krishna, serving him. So his happiness is not up and down, it's not fluctuating, because it's coming from the spiritual platform, and the spiritual platform is eternal. So the happiness of a devotee is eternal, it's eternal happiness. The third, and these two characteristics that we discussed, following nectar devotion. These two characteristics of Shubhada, granting all auspiciousness, and Kleshagni, these are experienced throughout a devotee's life, at least the Kleshagni is experienced up until the point of Asakti. Because at a point of Asakti, practically there's no more ignorance, there's no more causes for suffering, although some fragrance of sin may, fine fragrance of sin may be there, but there's no disturbance. There's no inclination or disturbance in that direction. And there's generally categories that these two characteristics of Uttam Bhakti, they come on the level of sadhana bhakti. And as we increase our attachment to Krishna, then these increase. We become more attached, then the auspiciousness of our life increases as we increase our attachment to Krishna. As we become more attached to Krishna and serve Him more and more, then also we become more and more pure, and Kleshagni has more and more effect. So these go up. The discussion we read yesterday is that these two characteristics, they go up to the point of nishta. They carry the devotees, anartha nivritti, sarvasanga, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, then nishta. Then at nishta, when one comes to the level of nishta and going on to reaching a sakti, then these other characteristics manifest. Two characteristics start to make their presence known at the level of bhava bhakti, and two more characteristics are experienced at the level of prema bhakti. So the third third characteristic here is of the six characteristics of uttam bhakti, moksha laguta krit, which is we've been discussing so much over the last few weeks about this moksha in relation to bhajan rahasyam. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that The devotee at the stage of Ruchi is indicated by Nadanana Janana Sundaram. He has such a taste for Nam Vajan that he loses his taste for the objects of this world, which are considered most tasty. Wealth, having wealth and beauty and going to Swarga or having beautiful men or women, this is all considered to be tasty objects of pleasure, very attractive. But the paramjasva nivartate, the higher taste that one gets from bhakti, is so great and so deep and so satisfying and fulfilling that one is able to easily leave these tastes behind. So this kind of experience is an experience. It's not a theory. It's an experience. It's not theory. It's an experience at the level of ruchi. One experiences this. When he actually attains ruchi nam bhajan, he feels... It's not... And before ruchi, at the stage of anartha nivritti, one is always being pulled. Like they say, the devil made me do it. They have this phrase, the devil made me do it, or the soul is willing. The soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. There's a phrase in the Bible. The soul means me, my independent, eternal identity, the Atma. I really want to be a good guy. I really want to do the right thing. But my material desires of this body, this flesh, this body, they're pulling me in the wrong direction. So, the level in Artha Nivritti, we have mixed tastes. We still have strong taste for reading newspaper and magazines and watching TV and all these things that we've developed intense samskaras for over perhaps many lifetimes. We've been watching TV since TV came out in the 40s or something, 30s. So if we lived in India, we possibly could have spent one or two lifetimes already watching TV, living to be 30 or 40 years old, which some people do live that long. At any rate, there's a pulling. There's kind of a tension there. There's some tension at the level of anartha nivritti. But one experiences a ruchi or taste in bhajan, then the tension goes less and less because your attraction to Krishna has become very strong. So then there's a slight pulling at ruchi. Sometimes I would find some interesting things in the newspaper. Maybe I should read. No, I shouldn't read. I shouldn't read. Gurudev said it's a waste of time. But still, I mean, there may be something interesting there. This dialogue goes on in the beginning stage of ruchi. It's a transitional phase, transiting from anartha nivritti into ruchi. Then there's a transitional phase from ruchi into a sakti. It's like a gray area. So this quality of moksha lagutakrit, this will come in ruchi, at the stage of ruchi. Mahaprabhu says that janmani janmani shve bhavatad bhaktir ahoitaki tai, that when this ruchi becomes strong in nam bhajan, then one thinks lagukrit. It is insignificant. The proposal of moksha, even Vaikuntha moksha, what to speak of, the unspeakable Mayavadi or impersonal liberation, it's very light, it's lagu, it has no weight in my mind. It is an insignificant, trifling idea. It doesn't entice me, it doesn't move me. I have no interest in it. I'm only interested in bhakti. Anyor, anyor, anyor. More bhakti, more bhakti, more bhakti. And sometimes we see meet devotees like that. They just want to do service. And they're not just service like a workaholic or a passionate fool, but their service is done with consciousness. Because you can train, you can hire someone to move around very passionately and do a lot of activities in a temple, but it won't be done with consciousness, at least. Of course it's done with consciousness, so you can't do anything. But it won't be done with Krishna consciousness. Whereas an enthusiastic surrendered devotee, he'll be working in Krishna consciousness because he'll always be thinking of Krishna. And because he's thinking of Krishna while he's doing various activities, he'll also be chanting. And we saw one person like that. Jayananda was like that. He was moving here and there, doing any service, and always chanting, and oftentimes preaching. He's painting the Rathyatra cards. We had direct experience. We're not simply repeating what other people said, but we had direct experience. 1975, the Bhaktas from L.A., some of the Bhaktas, they went to San Francisco to help in the construction of the Rathyatra carts. So we were one of those devotees. So we lived with them day after day for 2 weeks in 1975. Then later we were shifted to his temple in San Francisco in 76. So he was there briefly, then he went traveling. But directly seeing him and then hearing about all his glories from the whole temple after he left, because he started the temple, we really got to know about a lot about him. You know, seeing is believing, as they say. We heard about his glories so much before even going there as a bhakta, because he was famous around this country. But then when he went there and worked side by side, you'd see such a combination of saintly qualities: his humility, his tolerance, his friendliness, his love, his compassion, his concern for others, and all those other qualities are. But these are the ones that immediately come to my mind when I simply start speaking without thinking about all those 26 qualities. But he had the uncanny ability to, anyone walking on the street would stop and say, "What is this?" As you're walking down Stinson Boulevard, which is a street in San Francisco, and there's all buildings, all these big buildings, and when the sun is rising, there's all shadows everywhere. It's all dark until the sun comes up at a certain height. And then between all these tall buildings, there was one empty lot. And that empty lot, we rented that to build carts. Our carts were stored in some warehouse somewhere. And when I got there, they were already transported. So pieces of the cart were lying there. And this, yard, or the fence. But between on both sides, these tall buildings, behind there's tall building, across the street tall building. So it was always cold and shut and in the shade all the time until the sun would rise. I was right on the main street. So people walked by and they stopped, and all of a sudden they see this huge carts coming up, you know, what is these big wheels, like some kind of chariots from Rome or something. I don't know who knows what it is. And there's young people stop, "What is this?" And then they see us. Jayananda was always wearing his blue jeans and his t-shirt, and always had a shaved head and a sikha, and we also wore some pants, and you know, I think we wore a kurta and some yoga pants or something, because we were bhaktas, and bhaktas, they wear like saffron yogi pants and kurta. So they would stand there, and he would go up and say, "Hello, how are you? You know, come on in, take a look. Do you know what we're doing?" And obviously, they don't know what we're doing. So he would immediately make friends. He had this, he was not envious, completely transparent heart. There was no envy there. So he would say, "Please come in, take a look." See, and he would tell them. And pretty soon the people, he was like a magnet. He was like a magnet of love, love magnet. And the people, the conditioned souls, their hearts were like filings of iron, like iron pieces. And if they got anywhere near him, they would get stuck on him. It wasn't artificial, or that he read some books on how to be a nice guy, and you know, you get these books on how to be a nice guy, win friends and influence people by Dale Carnegie. Available in 27 editions and everywhere around the world. How to Win Friends and Influence People. They have these books. He wasn't like that. He had Krishna was in his heart, and he saw Krishna in everyone's heart. So anyone got near him, they would just get stuck. like iron particles of iron getting stuck on a magnet. The people use those phrases, oh, he has a magnetic personality and all these type of things. But he had all that, but more than that, he had the spiritual magnetism of a pure devotee. And that type of magnetism attracts everyone and anyone. Dira dira jana priyo priyakaro nirmatsaro pujito. He was totally nirmatsar, totally non-envious. So people would come and they'd be attracted and they would talk to them and they'd say, okay, we have to go now, we're going to school or going to work. And he would say, well, if you could, maybe you could help us for a few minutes because you look like you're pretty intelligent. He's also kind of a clever speaker also. But he'd say, you seem like you're pretty intelligent, you're going to college and everything. You know, we need some intelligent people to help us out here for a few minutes. And, you know, if you could like hold these stencils, he had these cardboard stencils and they had little swans on them. Like a series of swans. I guess there's, you know, swan look like ducks, but supposed to be swans swimming. So first you paint the borders around the cart, the platform where Jagannath sits, there's this wood hanging down. You paint it blue. So I remember I painted it blue. That was one day. That was my big service, very expert service. Right? So I'm painting that blue, and then that's dry. Then you put the stencil on it, and then it has cutouts. That's what's called a stencil. And then you paint white over that, and then it becomes white swans on the blue water. So then he's telling these college students that are studying medicine or whatever, well, you seem very intelligent. Do you think you could hold this stencil? You could hold this stencil while I paint the white ducks? Do you think you could do that? I mean, really like in a humble way and not like pretentious way. I mean, you can't imagine. And it's so childlike and so innocent. And so sweet and gentle. The guy would just say, oh, I think I could do that. The guy's like going for his PhD and heart surgery or something, right? He said, I think I can hold this stencil. And then Jayananda would work with him. So be careful, hold it steady, keep it straight, which doesn't really matter anyway, but you know. So the guy was like really fully attentive. Oh, I have to keep this straight, you know. And then Jayananda would paint it and then he'd go like this to the next section and pretty soon, the guy was there for 5-6 hours, missed all his morning classes, and then the truck would come from Berkeley with some, this red truck that would come with halva and breakfast and fruits and things. And then, because we started like 6 o'clock in the morning. So then Jayananda would say, oh, look, prasad has come, look, stay for prasad. So in this way, well, he was absorbed in service of Krishna, and he didn't. If you ever would ask him, what do you think of liberation? He'd say, what do you mean liberation? Moksha laguta krit. I think devotee's already liberated. He's absorbed in the happiness and meaningfulness of serving Krishna. So most people, they want happiness from life or from their work, or they want meaningfulness. It should have some meaning. So the devotee's activity, we don't call it work, we actually call it seva. The devotee's activity is actually not only beneficial for him and everyone, but it's meaningful. It's really meaningful. And it's happy. It produces happiness. So the actual verse is here where Rupa Goswami describes, Manageva Parudhayam Ridaye Bhagavadrato Purushartas Tuchatvaras Chinayante Samantata. This is verse 33 from Pratam Lahari, first wave from the Purva Vibhag, means Eastern Division. And the title of this verse is Moksha Lagutakrit, which means bhakti causes total disregard for liberation. In other words, bhakti makes liberation seem lagu. When we have guru and lagu, lagu means light. Bhakti makes liberation seem insignificant, trifling, not important. It's a light thing. Oh, wow, liberation. And yogis are spending thousands and thousands of years in Satya Yuga meditating, doing intense austerities, and you say, excuse me, Mr. Yogi, what are you doing? Oh, I'm striving for liberation. Oh, really? What a waste of time. all this endeavor, all this hard work, oh, I don't really care a fig for that. So this is an amazing aspect. Now the translation is verse, when even a little attraction for the Lord grows in the heart, Bhagavad Rati, the four objects of human attainment, Artha, Dharma, Kama, and Moksha, become like grass. Oh, this word is there. Trina yante samantata. They become like a blade of grass. It's not very significant. So lagu means light or insignificant. So now in the verse he's telling this much insignificant, one blade of grass. They're shameful to appear before bhakti. So he's saying these attainments that people want, these desirable objects, people want artha, wealth or prosperity, and dharma, piety or religiosity. Kama means sense pleasure, and moksha, liberation. They're like grass, and they become ashamed to appear before Bhakti Devi. They feel, oh, we're so insignificant, and Bhakti Devi is so great. She's so all-encompassing, so effulgent, so beautiful, so powerful, so attractive. We're ashamed. And Jiva Goswami's purport, he says, that the word in this verse, Rupa Goswami is using prarudha, which means grows. It means grows, but it is not born. This indicates that bhakti is not produced from something else, but that it is self-manifesting. This is always a point we're being reminded of, that bhakti is not caused by anything. There's no causal relationship. As we mentioned earlier, everything in this world, on this side of the Karana Samudra, everything is, we're on this material side of the causal ocean, so everything here has a cause. Cause and effect, right? Krishna says, Sarva Karana Karanam. I am the cause of all causes. So the entire material world moves on the principle of cause and effect. So the entire sojourn, all the millions of years we spent in the material world, we've always been thinking, calculating, measuring, weighing, and acting on the principle of cause and effect. If I do this, what gain will I get, or what loss will I incur? Cause and effect. This is the whole mode of operation in the material world. If we cross beyond this material world and cross beyond the causal ocean, and we become bathed and cleansed of all material contamination, we'll enter the causeless realm. Haitukidam. Haitu means cause. So we'll go to that place where there's no cause. Everything is self-manifesting. It just happens by the will of the Lord. So that's the spiritual world. So bhakti comes from there. Ramanda Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij. Then we can wander all over the causal creation. We can wander all over this creation, and any planet in this Brahmanda, in this universe, we will find the principles of cause and effect. You do this, you get that. You do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. This is the karmic laws that are running the entire universe, from Brahmaloka to Patalaloka. But bhakti doesn't come from this universe. It comes beyond. It comes by prasad. It is prasad. Prasad means mercy. It means bhakti is a sarup shakti. It's the internal potency of the Lord. And it's just when it manifests whenever Krishna wills. It's in his department. It's his will. So if he somehow, for whatever, sometimes for some reason, or for no reason, or whatever reason, or no reason, as we're saying, there's no cause, he picks out someone and he arranges for them to get bhakti by connecting them to a bhakta. And then you get the seed of bhakti. So bhakti is not produced from something else, but it is self-manifesting. The goals of human endeavor, artha, dharma, kama, and moksha, become like grass. That means they feel ashamed to appear in the front of bhakti. So it's amazing that wealth and prosperity, they feel shameful. And there's some more discussion here. that on this verse at hand, which is 33, there's some more discussion. It says, even with the slightest awakening of bhava bhakti in the heart for the Lord, because we mentioned that these two qualities start to manifest in bhava bhakti. They actually begin to manifest at the level of ruchi. But as sakti, they become more manifest. But even with the slightest awakening of bhava bhakti in the heart for the Lord, the four objects of human pursuit, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, they become insignificant and as worthless as straw. Well, same basic thing. So this, of course, these things are, there's not like, they kind of stretch, as I mentioned. At the level of ruchi, one starts to, he feels to some extent, he loses any concern for liberation. But it's not very strong at ruchi. Because these characteristics that are being described, he says that moksha, lagutakrit, and sudurlabha, these are the characteristics of bhava bhakti. What is it? Bhava bhakti means that sudurlabha means it's very rare to attain bhava bhakti. That's very rare because that only comes, you know, that's, we can, on, from our side, somehow once we get the touch of bhakti, we get the seed of bhakti, we can do something from our side. We can engage in sadhana. And we can follow the scriptures and follow the yama niyama of sadhana. And by associating with Krishna, we can become attracted to Krishna. We can become attached. And we can serve Him and even perform Raghunuga Bhakti. But then, from that point, after Ruchi and Asakti, we can become somewhat attached by our own endeavor. After that, then we're attached. Then Krishna has to think, okay, you're attached to me. But I'm not sure whether I'm attracted and attached to you yet. Like sometimes some guy falls in love with a girl. He's attracted and he's attached. But she's remaining neutral. She's not showing much. She may not even be showing any interest. And even if he calls her on the phone, she says, who is this? Hangs up the phone. So we're also calling Krishna on the phone. We're calling him on the cell phone of our japa beads. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna, right? Krishna, like that. And we keep ringing 108 times, we ring, and then we ring another 108 times. On each time we ring, we hear this announcement. The Airtel number which you have called is presently engaged. Please call later. Bhagavan Sri Krishna is presently engaged with Srimati Radharani and Nikunj Leela. Please call later. So again we call... yeah, sometimes beyond range. Our call is just beyond coverage. Mostly it's like that. We don't get any announcement or any type of, we don't know what happened. We're sending our call out there, but we don't know what's going on. Beyond coverage. So this is, so some of these partial manifestations of at least moksha comes, as Lord Chaitanya is saying, even to the level of ruchi. But we can fully feel that moksha is like a straw when we actually attain bhava. When we come to this platform of actually loving attachment to Krishna, and we actually have realization of Krishna, then we can think that this moksha lagutakrit, that this liberation is very insignificant. So now the next verse, he states this in his own words, Rupa Goswami, how saying that one of the symptoms of bhava bhakti, there's two symptoms that appear in bhava bhakti. One is moksha lagutakrit. That one, lagu, thinks that moksha or the idea of moksha is totally insignificant. I have no attraction or no care for moksha. I'm quite happy serving Krishna where I am. I don't want to go anywhere. Just like the Brijavasis, as we mentioned before. When the Brijavasis die and they burned on the funeral pyre, they burn with their face down. First of all, they burn them on cow dung. We were reading in the Ekadasi Mahatmyam a few days ago about this king whose son-in-law died. Remember the king? The king had a son-in-law, Shobhana. I think it's son-in-law's name was Shobhana, and he came back to his father-in-law's kingdom with his wife. And his wife warned him, he said, listen, in my father's kingdom, everyone has to do Nirjala Ekadasi, even the animals. And so I'm warning you. And then he said, I don't know if I can make it. Shobhana said, I'm a king after all, I'm a prince, and I have quite a good appetite. I don't think I can make it. Well, anyway, and she said, you have no choice. We're going to visit my father. He said, all right, I'll try. So then he fasted, and then about halfway through the night, he died. So it's a long story, but when he died, then his father-in-law did a royal cremation for him, and he was burned on sandalwood. So when you burn someone, it takes about 150 kilos of wood. So 150 kilos of sandalwood went up there and smoked up the king. So this is called a royal cremation in terms of karmakanda, or the royal cremation for the son-in-law of a king. This is grand style. So in Braj, they also burn Brijvasis in grand style. They pile up a bunch of cow dung cakes, which, you know, cost nothing. It's just a poop from the cow. And they pile that all up, and then they lay the body face down. And if you read the Smriti Shastra, when one is being cremated, he's lying face up. Because the idea is he's supposed to go up. Mukti means up. Of course, in terms of consciousness and these planets, which are expressions of different levels of consciousness, they're in every direction. It's not that heaven is also down, and heaven is also to the left and the right. The planet is, generally people say, if you ask them, where is hell? They say, down. And we say, where is heaven? They say, up. But in bhakti, they say, where is heaven? We say, down. Because the more down you get, the higher you go up. So the more you get trinada pisunichena, the lower you go, the higher you reach. So we have to become more tolerant than a tree and lower than a straw in the street. And that type of humility, that type of genuine humility based on realization will attract the attention of the Lord, even the embrace of the Lord. And when one is embraced by the Lord, then he receives prema. And that prema will take him up or down or wherever. It will take him to the spiritual world. So the Brijvasis, they lie face down. Because they don't have their eyes on any other planet. There's Bhur, Bhuva, Swa. This is Bhur, then there's Bhuva, region of Bhuva planets, and there's Swa, and Swargaloka, then Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, Brahmaloka. They don't care about any other seven planetary systems. This planet is fine. Not only this planet, but Brajabhumi is very fine. So they want, their eyes are facing down, because they're thinking, we're happy here. We're Brijvasis. We're born in Krishna's land. And then we don't want to go anywhere. We want to come back here. So we don't want to be distracted by looking up in the sky. So they're burned on cow dung. Because the cow dung is all Braja Raj. It's all the dust of Krishna's feet is mixed in there. Because the cows are eating the grass. And the grass is full of the kunkum from Radharani's breast, which fell on Krishna's feet when he held her, she holds his feet on her breast. So that kunkum is on the grass. That chandan from Krishna's body is on the grass. And the cows eat that grass. Right? And then after they eat the grass, then back door. And then the Braj gopis come and put their handprints on it. So each piece is autographed. Each piece of cow dung is autographed by a Braj gopi. Signature model. No two are the same, because each gopi's hands are different. So their handprints are there. And they want to be burned on that type of bhav, that type of fire, this cow dung, which is mixed. So their body will be just surrounded by all this wonderful fragrances of kunkum and musk and chandan and the fingerprints of the gopis and their eyes and the brajaraj. So they don't have any concern for liberation. Nadanam najanam nasundaram kavitam vajagadishkame mama janmani janmani shri bhavatad bhakti haitakitui. They have braj ruchi. They have taste for Braj. So, moksha laguta krit. They don't care. So now, to support his statement, as is the standard, Rupa Goswami is quoting from the Vedic literatures, as Prabhupada said, the standard books of knowledge. This phrase is used in all throughout Prabhupada's books. In Bhagavad Gita, it's used about 10 times in purports. Then one should not act whimsically in life, doing whatever comes to his mind, but one should guide his life on the basis of the standard books of knowledge, the Vedas, the standard books of knowledge. They set the standard of perfection and excellence in every field, in health and life, Ayurveda, and stars and astronomy, Jyotirveda, and fighting and ballistics, Dhanurveda, and all the different aspects of life. The Vedas are the perfect compilation of knowledge to give happiness and fulfillment to the human race. So he's quoting Narada Pantrantra, which says, Hari Bhakta Mahadevya Saramuktyadi Siddhaya Bhuktyash Chadbhutash Tasyas Chaitikava Ranuvrata. All the perfections and siddhis headed by liberation and all astonishing material pleasures follow after the great goddess called Hari Bhakti, like fearful maidservants. So, if there's a queen in a kingdom, she has so many servants, so many female young ladies, young girls will serve her. They'll dress her hair and bathe her and massage her and accompany her wherever she goes. They will fan her when she walks through the palace, and they'll sprinkle rose water in front of her and maybe drop some flower petals on her. And it's when a queen moves anywhere, it's quite a sight. So, and they have some feelings for the queen, these maidservants, but they have so much, it's Gaurava Sakhi, Gaurava Sakhi Ras. They have a mood of some friendship with the queen, but they're also very respectful. There's a little bit of fear, because they know that if the queen becomes unhappy, then they can lose their bani, lose their braid, and their neck also. So they're serving very carefully. So these acquirements, artha, kam, and moksha, these are also devis. There's moksha devi, or mukti devi, and there's artha devi, because these are powers, these are possessions. There's kama devi, like kama devi, there's also kama devi, whose name is Rati, right? Kam is lust, and that is, his name is Kamadev, and he has a wife. His wife's name is attachment. They go together. They make a good team. Mr. Lust and Mrs. Attachment. Kamadev and Rati. So this Kamadevi and this Artha, all these Devis, they stand behind the goddess of devotion, Bhakti Devi, with folded hands, a little fearful that she might finish them off. She might say, listen, Mukti Devi, jao, get out from here. I don't need your work anymore. Oh, really? Where will I work? Where will I go? Listen, Artha Devi, get out. We don't need any, we have everything, we don't need any assistance from you. Listen, Kama Devi, we're self-satisfied. We're Aptakam and Atmaram. We have no desire to fulfill and we're satisfied within ourselves. So we don't need you, Kama Devi, get lost. So Bhakti Devi, they're all a little bit afraid of Bhakti Devi because she's the supreme, she's the queen. As maidservants fear the queen, then these rather trivial, these are all part of the Lagutakrit. These are all light and insignificant when compared to the goddess of devotion. Artha, kam, moksha are all insignificant. The next verse. Now, the second characteristic of Bhava Bhakti, it's being told by Rupa Goswami, is that it is sudurlabha. Sudurlabha. Labha is like lobh. It means greed or attainment or acquirement. It's dur. It's difficult. It's a really long way away. Dur-labha. It's far away. It's not easy to attain. And sudurlabha means it's really difficult. It's really hard to attain. verse he cites in his words. Sadana Oger Anasanger Alabhya Suchiradapi Harina Chashvat Deyeti Dvida Sasyat Sudurlava. Bhakti is difficult to attain. So we say it's Sudurlava, it's very difficult. Now he says there's two ways that's difficult. If undertaken in great quantity, but without attachment, bhakti cannot be attained, even after a long time. Even if practiced with attachment, Krishna does not give bhakti to the practitioner immediately. Of course, there's some purport here, but we'll just mention. He's making two points here. How is it that bhakti, and we're talking about uttam bhakti at the level of bhava. There's uttam bhakti at the level of sadhana, and then uttam bhakti at the level of bhava, and uttam bhakti at the level of prema, which is the fullest, 100%. 100% uttam bhakti is prema. So if we're practicing sadhana bhakti, must be very, very important part of practicing sadhana bhakti is the feelings behind our activities. The motivation, the feelings, the angle of vision. Because he's saying even if you're very, if bhakti is undertaken in great quantity but without attachment. So this attachment means asakti. There's so much bhakti going on, you're doing so many activities, but you don't have this feeling of attachment for the Lord, which is asakti, because after asakti comes bhava. So even in the beginning, as a sadhaka, rendering vaidhi sadhana or raganuga sadhana, we must be very careful that we're doing all of our activities with a sense of attachment. Although we're somewhat attached to Krishna and very much attached to maya at the stage of vaidhi, but we have to always be working to increase our attachment to Krishna. And that attachment to Krishna is most quickly developed by always hearing and chanting about Krishna. His name, his form, qualities, and pastimes. Especially his pastimes. Because the pastimes have everything. If you only chant the name, that's also very good. But when you read and hear about the pastimes, everything is there. So it's like complete. Because sometimes people are running around doing so much service, but their mind and heart are not actually connected with Krishna. They're doing the service, but they're not. And you see so many people, they come to ISKCON, they serve like anything, day and night, here and there. They're so active, and all of a sudden they go away. They just disappear. And then you meet them and say, no, I'm not much interested in that anymore. They say like that. Because they were not diligently working on developing attachment for Krishna. They were very passionate by nature. They were young, clever, intelligent, resourceful. They had different karmas working on their behalf, so they dovetailed those passionate karmas and some passionate activity of managing or running some temple. But they didn't cultivate the main limbs of bhakti. It's called Sarup Siddhi bhakti. The main limbs of bhakti are hearing, chanting, and remembering. So they may be very active doing many things. Because he's saying that if you undertake great quantity of bhakti without attachment, bhakti cannot be attained even after a long time. So we're doing so much devotional service at the level of sadhana, but we'll not attain bhava bhakti unless we're performing our sadhana bhakti with feelings of attachment for Krishna, the person, that he's really a person and we really want to love him, we really want to serve him with love. So this is a very important point. Then even if one is practicing with attachment, that means that ultimately means at the level of asakti, he has ruchi, he's steady, he has ruchi for Krishna Bhajan, and he's becoming very attached to the Lord, which we'll be studying this afternoon. We'll start that asakti section, Bhajan Rahasyam. Even if he has that, still, he's at that level, he's attained the level of asakti, which means intense attachment for the Lord, the person, and serving him in devotion. Still, Krishna, he holds back. He wants to see. Because when he gives bhava, then he's giving himself. So that's, our endeavors can carry us up to our endeavors with the blessings of guru and sadhana. We can come to the level of ruchi, nishta, ruchi, and a beginning of asakti. And after that, everything has to come down from above. And that's why it's sudurlabh. It's very, very rare. Krishna does not give bhakti to the practitioner immediately. Bhava bhakti is extremely difficult to attain for two reasons. Even long periods of practices of all the aspects of sadhana bhakti without any ruchi and asakti, taste and attachment. So we're doing so much sadhana bhakti, we're nishtha, we're very steady. There's no taste and no attachment. That's what he's saying. They do not make bhava bhakti available. And secondly, is not easily bestowed by Lord Hari. In the commentary in this verse, Mukunda Das Goswami, he states, in this verse, the word anasange means without attachment, which includes with no ruchi or taste, without which various forms of spiritual practices, even for a long period, do not arouse bhava bhakti. The various spiritual practices here include the 64 different forms of sadhana bhakti, out of which, if the following five aspects are ignored, then the practices of the rest will not make bhava bhakti attainable. This is what I was saying, and about how that some people they're very, you ask them, so you're doing all this service, you're going all around the world, and you're selling these paintings to build a temple in some place for your Gurudev. So why are you doing this? Well, it's my service. It's my service to Gurudev. I'm trying to please him. And so do you have some ruchi? Do you have some taste for Krishna? No, I mumble my rounds. I don't have any. So they're very actively serving, but they don't actually have any taste for the name. They don't have any taste, ruchi, for Krishna's Naam, Rup, Guna, and Leela. It's very interesting what he's saying here. He says, he's talking about there's 64 limbs of bhakti. You know, the 64 limbs, there's five limbs that are called panchanga bhakti. So he's saying one may be doing the 59 of these limbs of bhakti. And one of the limbs of bhakti is called the most important limb of bhakti, which is, includes everything. It's called Vishrambena Gurur Seva. Because someone might say, well, if I look at the 64 limbs of bhakti, I don't see selling paintings in the list. Is it bhakti? I don't see tuning up the temple cars as bhakti. I don't see rewiring the deity room with electric, you know, like air conditioning as bhakti. So I guess this is not bhakti, because Rupa Goswami is not mentioning it. So is that statement correct or not correct? What do you say? How is fixing the wiring in the deity room, how is that bhakti? How does that become bhakti? You.
Because ultimately you are trying to please Krishna only by those activities.
No, gotta get a little more specific. The parampara on the back side there.
The consciousness, how you are
doing the thing. Devarshi. There's so many activities devotees engage in which are not in this list of 64, so how do they actually become, how can we consider that they're bhakti or devotional activities aside from these symptoms that they mention? Pleasing to the Lord, it's your consciousness. Exactly. By the Guru's order. We actually gave the answer about 2 minutes ago. Vishrambena Gurur Seva. Right? Vishramba means different meanings, because you can say Vishramba, which means without respect, without distance, and without awe and reverence, which means very friendly and intimate. Or you can say Vishramba, or you can say Vishramba. Depends on how you break up the word. It can mean with great respect, with a touch of fear, or it can mean great intimacy. So it's an interesting word. And even the relationship can change. It can start off with being respect and fear and then later on the respect and love can kind of become more intimate. So the key note here is this is in the 64 limbs of bhakti, the third one, number three, there's 64 limbs. First one is take shelter of guru, then second one is take diksha, and second aspect of that is receive shiksha, Sri Krishna diksha, shiksha adhyana. And the third one is guru seva, serve the guru. Whatever the guru says, you do. Then what is that? That's bhakti. And of course your consciousness should be there that I'm doing this to please guru, principally, because Krishna, who's Krishna? You saw Krishna? You know Krishna? No. We're trying to know Krishna by knowing Guru. Yasya prasadam bhagavat prasadam, yasya prasadam nagati katopi. We can see Guru, we can feel Guru, we can hear from Guru, we can cry on Guru's shoulder, and he can slap us and crack us and do so many things that are necessary to make us go forward. And Krishna is watching from inside the heart saying, all right, good slap. You gave him a good slap. Give him another one. Give him one for me too. So Krishna is the observer. He's a shakshi. He's a silent shakshi, but he's inspiring the guru to act because the guru is his representative, Kripa Shakti Murti. So this is a very, very important principle to understand, because otherwise we can't see how, because some neophytes, they read Nectar Devotion, they say, oh, it doesn't say selling paintings in Taiwan. I'm going around the world selling paintings. Or it doesn't say this is bhakti, so I quit. I have doubts. I have doubts in guru. I have doubts in... But this is guru seva. And this, in fact, is a whole basis. So of these 64 limbs, which includes guru seva, Mukunda Das Goswami, who's a famous commentator on this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada also quotes him without mentioning his name also in his Nectar Devotion, he says that of the 64, these five are essential. And if one is doing all the other things, and he's not doing these five activities of bhakti, then he will be engaged in devotion, and he'll be getting sukriti and getting purified. He'll be going forward slowly. But he won't be actually getting attached to Krishna very quickly. So that's why, generally, a spiritual master will be very much concerned about how is the devotee engaging in these, how much the devotee is engaging in these five limbs of bhakti, in addition to his tuning the cars and putting in electric wires and selling the paintings and cooking the offering and changing the diapers and, you know, all these things that are also guru seva. Because the guru said, you know, produce some Krishna conscious children. So if you have children, you have to change diapers. So changing diapers is also bhakti. Sleeping is bhakti. Bathing is bhakti. Ironing your sari is bhakti. You know, it's all bhakti when you're doing it with the consciousness for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. Practically. Bhakti is all-inclusive because bhakti functions on the platform of consciousness. So wherever you inject your consciousness, devotional consciousness, when your consciousness is fixed on Guru and Krishna, when you inject that consciousness into any material activity, that material thing becomes fireized, becomes spiritualized. Karmi sleep, we sleep. Karmi sleep is bhog. We sleep is bhakti. So this is how bhakti is. So the beauty of bhakti is not that you have to look different and become some weirdo with a shaved head or wear a jat or, you know, dreadlocks, or the lady has to wear a burlap sack for a dress, wear an old rice bag, and go around the town. I'll see I'm a devotee. It has nothing. This is all external. It has nothing to do. Although maybe contributive, but ultimately bhakti is. The Pandavas, you read in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, how great devotees were the Pandavas. You know, and Draupadi wore a sari that cost 50 lakhs. You know, solid gold and silk. So he wasn't like, oh, I'm Krishna's pure devotee, I better wear rags. They had chariots and fabulous palaces. It's all there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But they accepted, but their consciousness behind all this opulence and wealth, their consciousness was everything here is for Krishna's pleasure. And we're assuming this royal position for the service of the Lord and to lead everyone in God consciousness. And the proof that their consciousness was actually pure and not just some joke or some imitation was as soon as Krishna left the planet, then there was no more need for them to be royal people. There's no more need for them to have all this fabulous opulence and wealth. And they all walked off to the Himalayas with the clothes on their back. And no bangles or anything. They left everything behind. So this is the greatness of these devotees. They accept anything for the promotion of the service of the Lord. So their service was no more needed, so they again became in this way. So he's saying that the following, if someone ignores the following five practices of bhakti, then the practices of the other 59 will not make bhava bhakti attainable. Right? So one of the 59, we're talking, is that right? 5 and 9. 59 and 5 is 64. So these five are called panch anga bhakti, five limbs of bhakti. So one of the other 59 is guru seva. So you're doing guru seva, day and night you're just working like a dog, selling 1,000 paintings a day. But you're not really chanting much japa, or maybe you say, oh, I'm doing a seva. Just like one sannyasi, we met him, and he was Prabhupada's servant. And he was so absorbed in Prabhupada's service, he was secretary and servant. And he was traveling, we met him in the temple in 75 in Berkeley. He was so inspired, and then a year later, I again met him at the Sunday feast. And he had hair, and he was wearing he had a Levi's on and a white kurta. Blue Levi's, 1976, and I said, wait a minute, what happened, where's Prabhupada, and where are you, and what's going on? He said, I left Prabhupada's service, and I left, I'm going to college, I'm studying University of Berkeley medicine. I said, what happened? A year ago you were here, and you were giving these fired up classes, and he's a very famous sannyasi, the whole story is in Leelamrita. So then I asked him, because I sat with him, because I was very inspired by him, and he said, well, I thought that just by doing guru seva, vishram bena guru seva, that because I was with Prabhupada, I was traveling with Prabhupada, and I was doing his seva day and night, that I didn't have to chant my rounds, because I didn't even have time. And by the time I took rest, Prabhupada was waking up, and I had to do seva. And I hardly read anything. Of course, he's very learned and very intelligent even before. You know, he's already quite an established preacher and sannyasi before he took the role of the service. But while traveling around for a year or so, then he became somewhat, you know, maybe offensive to the... Because Prabhupada never gave the order that you should stop chanting. He said this is the primary, most important order of the guru, is to chant 16 rounds. And then also read every day. These are standing orders for every disciple. So he started to neglect those, which means... Guravagya. Guravagya means this aparatanam and aparat saduninda, offending the sadhu and the guru. So he said, it's because of this I neglected it, and then Krishna taught me that, you know, I got a reaction. Then I started getting, you know, this is a long story, but I was neglecting, I was doing the guru seva, but I wasn't doing the other five limbs of bhakti. So therefore, as this Mukunda Das Goswami is making the point, is that whatever taste I had, that's called Ruchi Abhas, it's called a shadow of a taste. This is described in Bhakti also in this book. That Ruchi Abhas, that shadow of a taste, was destroyed by my offensive mentality. So I lost that, whatever little taste I had, and then I became offensive, and then Maya and Bhakti Devi said, listen, you should go a little bit to the side now. So he went a little bit to the side, and then after some time he came back. He got his degree in neural surgery or something like that. Neural surgeon. I mean, brilliant. He's a brilliant person. Now he's like, okay. So this happens. So here he's saying these five essential aspects of spiritual practices in the stage of sadhana bhakti are Sri Murti Seva. Worship of the deities with reverential attachment. Bhagavat Shravan Rasika Bhakta Sahasanga. To hear the Bhagavatam in the company of advanced saints. 3. To keep the company of such saints and devotees of Lord Hari as have devotion to and relationship with Lord Hari, which are allied with his own nature of devotion and in relationship with the Lord, and who are affectionate and superior to him. This is a rather long way of saying sajatiya snigda. Sajatiya snigda sadhu sangha. In other words, we should worship the deities, we should hear Bhagavatam, we should associate with saints. that are affectionate towards us and that are more advanced than we are and are in the same bhav that we're interested in cultivating, or if we don't know what that bhav is, they're in the same sampradaya, they're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and they're more advanced than we are in surrender and bhakti. So this is Sajati Snigdha. Then four is Nam Sankirtan, as you chant the holy name of the Lord. And five is living in Mathura Mandala. Brajavas, Mathuravas, Mathurasthali. So these are the Panchanga Bhakti, which are listed at the end of the 64 limbs of bhakti. These are five are mentioned. Shri Murti Shada Seva, like that, Shat Sajatiya Sneha Sadhusanga Brajavas Nam Sankirtan. So Vishwanath Chakravarti comments that Bhava Bhakti cannot be attained unless one has undergone the course of spiritual practices starting from Shraddha, Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, and Asakti. Unless one has undergone these stages of spiritual practices, Bhava Bhakti is not attainable. Thus, the twofold difficulties which Rupa Goswami mentions here are, firstly, that Bhava Bhakti is not awakened even if the different stages of sadhana bhakti have been undergone for a long time, until the stages of asakti or attachment and ruchi or taste are reached. Secondly, even if there is attachment and taste, Lord Hari does not bestow it soon. He tests his devotee for long, and then only bhava is bestowed by the Lord, and it is not attained by the individual by his own efforts. So, by our own efforts, we can, not even our own efforts really, but by the mercy of Guru, by our own efforts and the mercy of Guru, we can engage in sadhana bhakti and come to the level of ruchi, have some taste, and come to the preliminary stage of asakti. So unless ruchi and asakti are there, it's impossible to attain bhava, which is the next stage, bhava bhakti. And if we're engaging in so much devotional activities, but we're only we're still within the realm of Anartha Nivritti and Nishtha, then we can carry on at that level of Nishtha, minus Ruchi and Asakti, for thousands of lifetimes, and not attain Bhava or Prema. And if we are practicing Bhakti with Ruchi and with Asakti, even then, it's not that that alone will purchase us Bhava. And we're attached to the Lord, and we have taste, we're serving the Lord. Now it's still out of our hands. Bhakti is independent at all stages. So we can do that much, and maybe come to the level of ruchi and asakti, or we can come. Then it's up to Krishna whether he wants to bestow that rarely given gift of his own heart. So therefore, these are two reasons why bhakti is called sudurlabha. Any questions?
Is it possible to attain a prema bhakti without practicing sadhana bhakti?
Well, that's told in the question, can you attain prema? It's said in Nectar Devotion, it's called, there's Kripa City, and then there's Sadhana City. Actually, all perfection depends on Kripa, ultimately, because as we're saying, even if we're doing sadhana, we can't get the perfection of bhava or prema without the Kripa of the Lord, mercy of the Lord, or the Nitya Parishads, who are existing in the level of prema. But there is a phenomenon called Kripa Siddhi, where one doesn't do any sadhana, they don't do any sadhana at all, and they get prema. So, the analogy is given of receiving an honorary degree from college without attending. You never attend college, you never take any exams, but somehow you get recognized, the college recognizes you, like Rabindranath Tagore. Rabindranath Tagore was a famous writer and poet of Bengal. And he got an honorary degree from Oxford University. He'd never gone there, but his poetry and writing was so much appreciated by the literary department there that they conveyed upon him, or they gave to him a degree, honorary degree from Oxford University. So he got, it's called honorary degrees, but there's thousands of poets in India and thousands of writers, but he was the only one. So we shouldn't bank on that. Well, I'll just sit here with my little family, my kiddies, and maybe my number will come up and Krishna will give me frame. Anything else? Vivarshi. This term, sometimes it's confused, some misunderstanding. The identity of Bhakti Devi is an amsha of Srimati Radharani. She is an expansion from Srimati Radharani. Balaram, Radharani, and Krishna, they're all, you can say, Sarup, they're Sarup Shakti, Antaranga Shakti, and they're all Bhagavan. And they all have all the three primary divisions of energy or spiritual potency, they all have. Krishna has Ladini, he has Samvit and Sandini. Balaram has Ladini, Samvit, Sandini. Radharani has Ladini, Samvit, Sandini. It's Shakti and Shaktiman. So when you have a predominance where Ladini predominates and is the primary expression of energy, then Radharani is, that's Radharani. But she also has, within Radharani, she also has Samvit and Sandini. And Krishna, although he predominates with Samvit, like Vasudeva Krishna is the knowledge potency or cognitive potency, chit potency. So Samvit predominates with him, although Krishna has within him Ladini and Sandini. Then Balaram, who is also Krishna, he predominates with Sandini, the existence potency. He provides for so much existence, the holy Dham and Krishna's Brahman thread and his shoes and so many things. Although Balaram within him, he also has Ladini and Samvit. So when Radharani expands herself as Bhakti Devi, Bhakti Devi carries within her that Samvit from Radharani and the Ladini from Radharani. That's why it is said in the Shastras that Bhakti is a combination of Samvit and Ladini. But she herself is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So when one gets Bhakti, that's why it says in first canto, when one has devotion, automatically he gets Jnana and Vairagya. He gets knowledge and detachment. This first canto of Bhagavatam. So there's no relationship between Bhakti Devi and Tulsi. I say, Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani ki. It's nice, we're glorifying Bhakti Devi, but the Tulsi Devi is doesn't have any, I mean, Vrinda Devi and Bhakti Devi are totally different. I mean, if you get into like fine points of tattva, Vrinda Devi is also Kayavyuha. She's expanded from Radharani's body, but she's Leela Shakti, Leela Potent. She's for, because every, ultimately is Eko Bahusham. There's only one. And that one becomes two. The original, the Eko becomes many. So Krishna is one and he becomes many. So when he has a desire for vilas, which is time immemorial, when Krishna desires vilas, then to have vilas you need two. So Krishna becomes Radharani. So ultimately all Shakti is coming from Radharani, and then the Shaktiman or the enjoyer, there's the enjoyed and the enjoyer. Krishna is the enjoyer and Radharani is the enjoyed. They're inseparable. So all these devis are all basically expanded from Radharani. Vrinda Devi and the Manjaris and the Sakis and all these Nityaparishads. But when we're expanded from Balaram, the Shakti Tattva, the Shakti aspect of Balaram expands as Purusha Avatars and Mahavishnu, then Mahavishnu expands his Shakti as Tatastha Shakti. It's like this. Everywhere you have Shakti and Shaktiman, power and powerful. So Vrinda Devi is also coming from Radharani. But you can't, nowhere is it told that Bhakti Devi is Vrinda Devi or Tulsi. They're completely separate, and they have completely separate functions and activities. They can say Balaram is also Krishna. The Prabhupada said in one tape, he said the only difference between Krishna and Balaram is one's white and the other's black. Balaram has gopis, he has Rasalila. Krishna has gopis, he has Rasalila. Balaram plays a flute, Krishna plays a flute. All the same. Balaram, Krishna expands himself into Radharani. Right? So Balaram expands himself into Ananga Mantri, or into Revati, or into his, what do you call it? Revati and, you know, his wife and all these. We say Janama is called Nityananda Shakti, Janama Mata. Janama Mata is Ananga Mantri. Ananga Mantri is the only expansion of Balaram. It's the Ladini aspect of Balaram expands and becomes the form of Ananga Mantri. The Ladini aspect of Nityananda expands and becomes the form of Janama Mata.
Purnamasya, she's Bhakti.
No, Purnamasya is different. Purnamasi is Yogamaya.
Yogamaya.
Different.
Who is Bhakti Devi?
Maybe nobody heard me, but I said that Bhakti Devi is an expansion of Srimati Radharani.
Her name, her form.
The only name is given is Bhakti Devi. Just like, you know, she doesn't have like a different name in Gaur Leela and a different name in Krishna Leela. It's not like Radharani, her Kaya Vyuha, from her transcendental body, her Sarup Shakti, her spiritual Antaranga Shakti, spiritual Shakti, she expands as Rupa Manjari in Krishna Leela. And that Rupa Manjari becomes Rupa Goswami in Gaur Leela. But Bhakti Devi is Bhakti Devi in both. There's Bhakti in Gaur Leela and there's Bhakti in Krishna Leela. So, Radhe Radhe.